Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us today for OK Boomer, Teach Me Sales. I'm Kelly Bloomer.
And I'm Tom Bloomer.
OK, Tom, you're our sales pro. In 30 words or less, can you tell us about this podcast?
I'm going to try. You know, us salespeople like to talk, Kelly.
You sure do.
All right, 30 words or less.
Can you do it?
Well, if you're a sales pro and you're looking to grow in your sales career, if you like good, lively sales discussion, I think this is going to be a show for you. I've walked your walk for over 30 years in sales. I've knocked on the doors and overcome the same obstacles I think you may be facing as a seller, a sales manager, and as a VP of sales. I currently help assess, build, and train high-performing media sales teams. Well, Kel?
Yeah, you really went over 30 words.
But I think it was good.
I do too.
Okay, so I hope our listeners will be all set. And hey, let's roll up our shirt sleeves and let's get at it.
So enjoy listening to Tom and his guests talk sales. Okay, Tom, who's our boomer teaching us sales today?
Well, Kel, you know, we only do this every now and then, but you know how they say a picture is worth 1,000 words?
Yes.
We're going to open by a brief audio clip of today's guest, and I think it's going to get our listeners a good chance to see what today's show is going to be all about.
Okay, let's listen.
I realized that it was a tall order saying yes to a sales career because I had to call strangers every single day and win them over. And I realized the very first day I went into the sales role, I had been building up for 2 years to be in that role. And I went to 2 weeks at corporate training. I memorized the company story, all the scripts. I was top of my class. I knew the competition inside and out. I knew the product and service inside and out. I could demo it. I was ready to go. And I came back from corporate and I sat at the desk and I actually had to do sales. And I was mortified. I was looking at the phone thinking, what happens, not if they don't answer, what happens if they answer? What do I even say to them? They don't know me. I'm interrupting them. They won't want anything to do with me. And I had a fear set in of what did I get myself into? And I went to my manager in a moment of humility. Hi, it's me. I know that I was clamoring for this opportunity, but now I don't know what to do and I'm feeling paralyzed. And he said, go call 10 of our existing customers and just have a conversation. Those are easy calls to make. Tell them who you are. You just got in this role and ask them these three questions. One, why did you choose our company and the product and service? Two, what is the biggest gain since you've been on the service? He's looking for an ROI statement there. How have we made your life better? Three, why do you remain a client even when the competition is consistently knocking on your door? I didn't have to make all 10 calls. I think I got through half of them. And what I heard in the answers was how valuable it was that I was selling. What I heard was the pains and problems that had been addressed and solved. What I heard was how their lives were made better because of saying yes to this product and service. And so my mindset shifted. Wait a second. People should be happy to take my phone call. This is amazing. Why wouldn't they want these great outcomes? And my mental state shifted. My emotions then shifted into those of fear, into optimism and excitement and passion. And that just, fueled so much energy inside of me to make those calls and to have those conversations.
So Kel, what do you think?
Wow. That was really a very powerful clip. And so many people from so many different industries can really identify with that.
We all go through that at some point, right?
So true.
Especially in sales. And you know, what I was really enjoyed about this interview, Mary Grothy, who's our guest today, we're going to hear how she started at age 22 in sales. And it's kind of an interesting story how she gets into it. She is then the founder of the Sales BQ. She's got a podcast. She's got a radio show. She's currently CEO of House of Revenue. And we're going to hear all the ways that she transformed into those roles. It's a great message for anyone in sales or thinking about going into sales.
Okay, so let's listen.
Hey, Hey, it's Larry Long Jr. from Durham, North Carolina. Okay, Boomer, teach me sales.
Okay, so welcome everyone. We are here today with Mary Grothy. Mary, I'm really excited because a lot of the guests that I've had so far, we've only had this podcast for a little over 2 months now, and a lot of the guests I've either known for a long time or I've been connecting with them for quite a while. But I'm going to learn a lot about you at the same time my listeners are. So I'm really excited about that. But I do want to give them a real quick backstory. So one of the podcasts, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I like to do my research, which all of us good sellers have to do, right? We learn to do our homework. So I do a lot of research. I listen to Scott Ingram's Sales Tips, which I love. I highly recommend it for people. Real quick, to the point, 5 or 6 minutes. And I just happened to click in the one day and you're giving a sales tip. It's one maybe if we have time, I'd love you to share with our listeners. It was really good on shortening the sales cycle. So was not familiar with you. I sent you a connection on LinkedIn. You were nice enough to agree to connect. And I said, hey, you know, great job on the tip. I really enjoyed it. And that was it at that point. About a week later, I'm listening to another of the podcasts I enjoy, and it's Sell or Die with the Gittimers. And here you are again. And this time, though, I really got to get a sense of your story. And it reminded me, I've been doing this for close to 30 years. I've worked with a lot of amazing sellers. And your story kind of hit at my heart of some of the people I've worked with in the past. So that's kind of our backstory. I really appreciate you jumping on with us today. I love talking with leaders and business owners, but I don't enjoy talking with anyone as much as I do really fun, gifted sellers. So I think we're going to have a great time. Tell our listeners a little bit about your story and who you are.
Yeah, first, I'm really honored to be your first stranger on the podcast.
There you go. You're going to talk about this years from now, right?
That's exactly right. So pleasure to meet you. And thank you for that kind introduction. I enjoyed recording with both of those podcasts and the selling tips as well. My backstory is a fun story where I had no experience. I didn't have a degree. And at 22 years old, I read an ad in a newspaper for a sales admin job. I looked at that ad. I didn't understand half the language in it, but it was very close to my house and it was entry level. I thought, how convenient, short commute, and they're willing to teach me. When I went in for the interview, I didn't know I was sitting in front of the number one manager in the country, sales manager, but he saw potential in me and gave me the job, even though I really didn't know what I was doing. He invested in me for 2 years as an admin. I learned so much about payroll and HR and sales in the professional world. The company was a Fortune 1000 payroll and HR company. And I believe it was maybe a month into the job, I learned how to file commission reports. And when I did that.
That was an eye opener, right?
When I did that, I started in my role at $13 an hour, which is roughly $30,000 a year. I actually saw a salesperson make in 1 month what I was going to make for the year. And I thought, how is this possible? I grew up in the performing arts. My parents were small business owners. I grew up on that creative side and I never understood anything about business. I was never exposed to it. I didn't know. And I didn't even realize people could make that kind of money or how one would even attain that. I went to my manager and said, tell me more about the sales profession. How does somebody get into that? Well, fast forward, he invested in me to learn the trade. I got to go through Dale Carnegie courses, as well as listen to Brian Tracy's Psychology of Selling 11 cassette tape disc. And I rode in the field with the reps. I got to do really neat projects like a full CRM conversion from ACT to Salesforce. I got to sit with my manager and understand recruiting and hiring salespeople and top characteristics and traits and really got deeply integrated with the team. And after 2 years, they put me in as a mid-market B2B seller. And I became the top rep in the first 30 days. I had a goal. Brian Tracy taught me that when you set goals, it should be far above your quota. Your quota is to keep your job. Your goal should be aligned with what you're truly capable of and at the core, just what makes you proud. And I was so young and so hungry and so green. And wanted to prove everyone wrong. They thought my manager was nuts putting a 24-year-old in a mid-market role who's going to be selling direct to CEOs with no experience, no degree, no experience. They're like, you're an idiot. She's going to fail and this is going to come back on you. And I wanted to prove everyone wrong. The gal before me, who was the top rep, had sold $300,000 the year prior. So I had $150,000 quota and I said, I have to sell $301,000 because I'm going to beat that.
Just a little competitive, right? Not very competitive.
Extremely competitive. And I sold $758,000 in my first year. It was very interesting because I could have slowed down. I was fast out of the gate. I could have slowed down. I could have taken my foot off the gas when I knew I had already sold $300,000 just halfway through the year. But instead of taking my foot off the gas and saying, oh, you know, I hit my 300 and I beat the record, so now I'm going to take all this amazing money I'm making and just go party for the next 6 months, I decided to double down. If I could do that in the first 6 months, what can I do in the next 6 months? And so then I set a new goal for myself. I was just trying to beat myself every single month from what I did the month prior in all important metrics, like my average revenue per sale, my attachment rate, my close rate. I wanted to be as efficient as possible in what I was doing. And with that, I ended up selling more than number two and three combined. The next year, they cut my territory in half. They doubled my quota and they asked me to train reps and managers across the country. And I said, yes. And I entered into a very exciting year. I got to work with our VP of sales. The division I sold for was $300 million at the time on a $1.7 billion company. And it was the first time I understood at scale how you roll out processes and a new methodology and a playbook for such a large sales organization. It was an exciting exercise. And then I not only got to help write the process, the playbook and methodology, but then I got to train and I got to fly across the country and meet with teams all over. Well, I loved that work so much. At the end of that second year, I was really starting to evaluate, do I want to continue to do this or do I want to find something else? So I only had a half of a year and I just had my first bite of an entrepreneurial spirit just fighting inside of me to say, I think I want to do something bigger. I left the company in 2011 to go work for one of my clients who was a startup and they did back office work for small businesses. So everything from bookkeeping to CFO. I took an equity position and a massive pay cut. I helped scale that company. We quadrupled their revenue in 7 months. And at that point, I realized I want to do this for a living. This is fun. I started my first consulting firm. I was 27 and I ran it for 3 years. I helped startups and entrepreneurs, 36 of them to be exact, get the business plan out of their head, get it on paper, get it executing. And I took them from concept to profit, ideally within 60 to 90 days, which is much faster than most startups. They could be in business a year or two or five before they even start turning a profit. And I wanted to help them see that they could do that sooner. I made a lot of rookie mistakes as an entrepreneur, such a young entrepreneur. I didn't know how to price my services. I didn't know how to say no. I took on projects that I shouldn't have. I couldn't delegate. I had too much ego and it wasn't good. So I ended up becoming a starving entrepreneur, met my now husband, decided I want a great foundation with this man. I went back to the payroll company 3 years, sold millions, multiple top 10 finishes, bought a house, had a baby, sold one of the top 10 largest deals in history, full price, no discount, took the $100,000 commission check and started my second company. And I did that in 2017.
So now what, you're 28 at this
ha
point?
Ha, ha, ha. You're so nice.
Now, let me just back up for a second, though, because what you covered there in a few years, I mean, that's a lifetime for most of us, right? So can I ask you just a couple questions about on the way?
Of course.
All right. So we have got so many young professionals like you when they're starting out, trying to get those CEOs to pay attention, to trust them, to show them some respect. As so many of the people said, when you first started, there's no way she's going to be able to do this because these CEOs, are they going to look and give you that respect? How did you get started that first year with where you were at? How did you get their attention and show them that you were the right person to sell them?
Well, I had to get over my fears first. I was scared to death. And there's a reason why. I grew up with an alcoholic mom, and there was a lot of abuse in my family. I didn't have a lot of confidence in speaking in. I was just so scared to say the wrong thing. I was always in trouble growing up. The rules changed every day. Everything I ever did was wrong. And I realized that it was a tall order saying yes to a sales career, because I had to call strangers every single day and win them over. And I realized the very first day I went into the sales role, I had been building up for 2 years to be in that role. And I went to 2 weeks at corporate training. I memorized the company story, all the scripts. I was top of my class. I knew the competition inside and out. I knew the product and service inside and out. I could demo it. I was ready to go. And I came back from corporate and I sat at the desk and I actually had to do sales. And I was mortified. I was looking at the phone thinking, what happens, not if they don't answer, what happens if they answer? What do I even say to them? They don't know me. I'm interrupting them. They won't want anything to do with me. And I had a fear set in of, what did I get myself into? And I went to my manager in a moment of humility. Hi, it's me. I know that I was clamoring for this opportunity, but now I don't know what to do and I'm feeling paralyzed. And he said, go call 10 of our existing customers and just have a conversation. Those are easy calls to make. Tell them who you are. You just got in this role, and ask them these three questions. One, why did you choose our company and the product and service? Two, what is the biggest gain since you've been on the service? He's looking for an ROI statement there. How have we made your life better? Three, why do you remain a client even when the competition is consistently knocking on your door? I didn't have to make all 10 calls. I think I got through half of them. And what I heard in the answers was how valuable it was that I was selling. What I heard was the pains and problems that had been addressed and solved. What I heard was how their lives were made better because of saying yes to this product and service. And so my mindset shifted. Wait a second. People should be happy to take my phone call. This is amazing. Why wouldn't they want these great outcomes? And my mental state shifted. My emotions then shifted into those of fear, into optimism and excitement and passion. And that just, it fueled so much energy inside of me to make those calls and to have those conversations. What I started to do was, before it really became a thing, was use LinkedIn and the internet to do profiling before prospecting. I researched and looked up the companies as much as I could and the people that I was calling before I called them. And I tasked myself with having one value statement that would most likely resonate with them so they wouldn't hang up on me. And back in 2008, this is when things started shifting in the economy. And I had a great track record speaking to CFOs because the product and service that I sold was payroll and HR outsourcing. As companies were looking to downsize, they were considering outsourcing the effort and saving money by not having an internal department. So whereas my competition, even internally, kept calling payroll coordinators and HR managers, they didn't want to take the meeting or take the call because they were in fear of keeping their job, and that we could potentially be a replacement. So I went up to that CFO level mostly, and then CEOs, depending on the size of the company. And I told a story with them to grab their attention about how they were planning for it and what they were doing from a cash reservation standpoint and how they were planning for potential downsizing. And if they were open to learning how they could optimize where their dollars were going to make sure that they could still have the duties fulfilled, but for potentially 30 to 40% less than what they were paying, and always have a backup plan. They were interested in that conversation. I got the meeting and I was confident in reaching out and talking to them. I took payroll and HR technology and software and converted it into what that actually meant to making an executive's life better, depending on their role. And I lined it up with what was going on in the market and economy and specific to their industry, and tasked myself with ensuring that what was coming out of my mouth didn't sound scripted, canned, generalized, but was 100% about them. And it allowed me to then get on their sidewalk, not shout at them and try to get them on mine, meet them where they were, go for a walk, and figure out if we could get to an outcome where I got to earn their business.
Sounds like you had a fresh approach, right? Other people weren't approaching it that way. You were personalizing it, which nowadays that's what everybody talks about, but there wasn't as much of that going on, you know, 10, 12 years ago. And you had the confidence now, right? You believed in your product. You knew you could help them. And I always sensed, and it really came out in some of the things I've heard you talk on, there's a passion that comes through. You know, I have no doubt you love what you're doing, whether you're selling to those CFOs or you're meeting with people now with what you're doing, which I want to hear about your two companies in a little bit. But you have to absolutely love what you're doing, right? Is that what got you through those first couple of years in sales?
Of course. I'm a CEO now, and I have salespeople that sell to me. And I can sniff out when they're going through the motions, and I can sniff out when they're passionate about it. I want to buy from a passionate person who's committed to aligning with me with what my needs are and solving them and bringing forth something of so much value that I'm shocked I didn't think to go find it myself. That's what I'm looking for as a buyer, as an executive. And I think that so many salespeople miss the point where people buy from people. Sure, that's a cliche or saying or whatever. But do you even know what that means? Like, they buy from people they know, like, and respect, and who are like them, is how the original quote is written. And how are you aligning with that person? I published a blog on PCE, passion, conviction, and enthusiasm. I don't believe.
Passion, conviction. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm. Okay.
Passion is different than enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. Buyers buy emotionally, and they buy based on solving a problem more than they do for a gain. And so that's something that Sandler Sales proved out, and all their stats and everything in their methodology, that people are more inclined to make a buying decision and invest dollars to solve a problem than they are to gain something in life. Example, if I'm driving down the road and I've got my Jeep Compass and I'm looking over and I see a Tesla, I don't really like those, but we're using it as an example. And I'm looking at the Tesla, I'm like, wow, that's such a cool car. Oh my gosh, maybe one day I could get into electric vehicles. I don't know. It seems really super snazzy. My car is okay. It's super practical. It's paid off. I don't have a payment. Gosh, but that Tesla, it looks so slick. Maybe I want it. Maybe I don't. Okay, you get the point. But if I'm not paying attention because I'm looking at the Tesla and I crash my car and it's totaled, am I then more inclined to go look and potentially buy that Tesla because I'm without a car? The answer is yes. And so when you look at passion, you have to show up emotionally invested in identifying, uncovering, and gaining alignment with your buyer that there is a pressing pain or problem to solve, and that you are deeply committed and aligned with them emotionally on the importance of it and how it's costing them now, the cost of the problem that will be over time if they don't do anything about it, and then what that potential leap from their current state to the desired future state is. You can tell when somebody is reading a script or going through the motions, or like, yeah, we can set you up for a demo. I don't know. We're really booked right now. I probably can get a sales engineer on this for like 2 weeks. What does your calendar look like for the week of January 4th? Like, I literally am buying something right now for our company. And that is how the salesperson's talking to me. I'm like, if you're not excited about this and connected with me, I don't want you to get the money in the sale for this. There are probably salespeople on your floor that are so deeply, passionately committed to this profession. And I'm like, dang, you know, it bums me out. The passion when somebody's so aligned with me and solving that problem, that's how I buy. And I look back to how I was as a salesperson, and they used to tell me, if you can be this passionate about payroll, it must be good.
So it's one thing for you to have that passion and to sell the way you sell. nowadays you're training people, right? You're helping companies improve their organizations, their sales teams. You're meeting these people that don't have that. What do you do when that person just goes through the voice you just gave us a second ago? You know, I can fit you into my schedule. Let me see. You know, right now you probably don't want to meet with me during the holidays, right? You know, when do things get better for you? What do you do? How do you transform that person when you're not sensing that passion?
One, record them, because they won't be able to believe it until they hear it and see it. And then show them a side by side.
They love you right out of the gate, right? When you start taping them. So that's
good. Yep. I get, there's no pushback ever.
Mm-hmm. All right. So they're listening. Does the light bulb go off? And then how do you teach that then once they're open to it?
I re-record it, or our team does, and we'll demonstrate what it should be. And so we take the same pitch or presentation or same conversation, and we can redo it. And then we put ourselves in their shoes with that prospect, and we show them what the opposite of what they did looks like, what the enhanced version of what they did looks like.
Okay, so Mary, I'm really liking this. So you've got this taping, and now you're going to show them the enhanced version. You're going to show them kind of how it could have gone. But I'm wondering, how do you tee it up? Because, you know, they need to be in the right mindset, because you're about to show them some really cool stuff. How do you get them in that mindset?
Step one, you have to have that alignment in the coaching conversation. Step two, then you need to demonstrate it for them. And then in the demonstration, speak to theory. Speak to a tactical item that makes sense that they can implement. And so in this exact conversation that I'm talking about with this salesperson, I would then demonstrate it for them after we have a conversation of what could have been done differently. And then I would say, hey, let's try this. Let me share this example with you and see how this resonates. Then I get their feedback on my delivery. And then we say, how can we embed this moving forward? And so I'll break down my delivery and I'll tell them how I came to the conclusion that that's what I should do in that moment. So I'll break it down and say, because prospects buy emotionally, it's very important that you mirror them emotionally. So in that moment, the prospect was showing increased urgency, excitement. There was some passion behind it. Therefore, it's time for you to elevate to that same level. She was also talking about fill in the blank, whether it was timeline or project scope or whatnot. Anytime somebody is taking the conversation, when a buyer is taking the conversation to talking about timeline, project scope, investment, those are all buying signs. And that's where you have to take advantage of that opportunity and immediately shift your conversation and align where they are. Well, speaking of timeline, help me understand what your ideal timeline would be. If this is a direction you'd like to go, when do you want to go live? And how does that impact the business? Why did you choose that date? What happens if that date's not achieved? How does it push out this initiative or other items, fill in the blank? And so then it's just teaching them the if then. If you do these things, then this is what it can cause. Meaning if you're missing steps of the sales conversation, it's not that you're missing the immediate step alone, but you're missing all the things that could come from it, because you steer the conversation in a new direction. You created urgency and motivation, or you just took the conversation to the next stage of the sales process. Meaning now we're talking about closing and sealing something up. So that would be the second stage, is using that coaching conversation as an opportunity to learn, both in theory, through demonstration, through asking questions, conversation. And then the third step is to create an action plan and hold them accountable to it. If you're teaching and giving them something to do different, then you need to say and have a conversation and gain agreement on it on how it's going to be implemented moving forward and what you're going to be watching for. Because that's what they will remember when they go in that moment again. They'll pull from that piece of information and say, oh, this is that thing. Like, my prospect's doing that thing. So now I need to do this thing that I learned. And if you're saying that when you watch back the next call, that you're going to be looking for that, then it's top of mind and it's pulling it to the forefront of their mind. So they're conscious in that. But then it's actually holding them accountable.
Yeah, they need to see that you're going to follow up, right? That you're going to continue, because that one video, that one discussion, coaching opportunity, that's probably not going to change their behavior completely, right? They're going to need to have that constant follow up. You know,
Hey, listeners, it's Kelly Bloomer here to tell you the show is brought to you by Bloomer Associates. If you visit our website found in your show notes, you'll find we offer sales training, talent assessment for hiring and team development, and individual coaching for sales pros and managers. We bring over 30 years in media sales and leadership experience. If you enjoy listening to OK Boomer, Teach Me Sales, ask how our team can work with your sales team for virtual meetings, roundtables, and motivational seminars. You can contact us through our website or call today, 919-267-9871. Now back to our show.
One of the things you got to there, which I really wanted to spend a couple of minutes on, is talking about closing. I see so many people in sales, it's like a dirty word anymore. They don't talk about closing. And I know right in your profile, you talk about training people to close the sale. So you're talking about buying signs. You're talking about aligning with them as you're getting those. Is closing still vital to sales? How are you teaching that? Or most of these reps when you video, are they understand how to close? Are they missing closing opportunities? How do you train in that?
Yeah, they're missing a ton of closing opportunities, and it starts in discovery. They're not getting the buyer's buying criteria. They're not mapping out the decision process. They don't even know how they make a decision or why they're making the decision or when they're going to make the decision and who's a part of the decision. They're just missing so many key steps that when it becomes time to close, they can't. And it's awkward because they don't even know if they're talking to the right person. They don't know what other conversations need to take place. They don't know who else they're considering. They don't know a timeline. They don't know ability to make an investment. They don't know how they've purchased something like this in the past. And so it's just it's a dull, awkward ending to, okay, well, let me know what you guys think. Like, talk it over and I'll just
have no more features and benefits. Are you ready to buy? It's just, we're done, right? I have nothing left to say. Are you signing today? So that goes back to discovery. Is that what you're saying? That's where they have to do that fact finding up front.
This is my equation to sales. Figure out what they need. Sometimes they don't always know what they need. So you have to help them through great second and third level questioning. Really identify the problem, the magnitude of the problem and what it's costing them and solving it. So get the buyer's buying criteria. Map this out. Well, you have to study your craft. You have to know who you sell to. You have to identify your ideal client or customer profiles and then the buyer personas within each. Then you can use LinkedIn. You can use Zoom Info. You can use Sales Navigator. You can use your CRM or database and Seamless AI and Uplead and other tools to find who you think is impacted by your product or service, who should be in the conversation. And then in your prospecting efforts, you should do a multi-touch prospecting campaign where you adopt all of those people into your campaign. They're connecting with you on LinkedIn. They're getting emails from you. You're calling them. They're getting a mailer or whatever. They're being invited to a webinar. You're sending them relevant articles, white papers, downloads. Your marketing team is nurturing them. You're bringing them into the conversation so that by the time you do have a successful outreach and book a meeting, you can say, even though you booked it with one person, I've also been in connection with Jim, Sally, George, Frank, and Suzanne. I highly recommend they attend our meeting. They've received multiple communications from us at this point. They will know who we are. May I please invite them to this meeting? I'll put them on the calendar invite, or would you like to invite them? Not giving them an option. It's just I'm putting them on or you're inviting them.
Good.
And the salesperson is a consultant and drives the process to make sure that they're included. And then it's your responsibility as a salesperson to get everyone's specific buying criteria throughout.
It's got to be better than letting that one person you're talking to then sell all those other stakeholders on why they should work with you, right? That's never going to go well.
Sales is hard. Yeah, it's a tough profession. Why do we ask our prospect who's never done sales a day in their life to go sell on our behalf? Come on, people.
Yeah. And all they do, they get hit with one objection from one stakeholder and they're like, okay, yeah, you're right. You know, we don't need to go any further. So you're talking about that passion. You're talking about the discovery and doing all those little extras and things like that, like you did back at age 24 when you're just getting started. You talk a lot about sales BQ. So I think some of these are the ingredients. Can you kind of explain what are all the ingredients to your sales BQ?
BQ is the behavioral quotient. Quick story on how that came about. When I was selling for the payroll company and they wanted to replicate my numbers, I got to help rewrite the playbook. And then I got to do training. But we only saw a slight elevation in performance. And they wanted to know, what is the missing piece? Something is still missing here. We're not having people sell $1 million a year. What's going on? I said, let's start flying people to Denver, where I was based. We'll have them ride with you. I was like, great, I'd love that. Here's what I noticed. They couldn't keep up. And it was BQ, the behavioral quotient. It was the preparedness. It was the organization. It was the mental mindset that was setting me up for success every day because I was clear and aligned with the day's activities. I tasked myself with not getting triggered easily. So I would separate, as a piece of information would come to me, I would separate the facts from the stories, because oftentimes sales is a high pressure job and we're always on and we have high expectations. And we have to deal with a lot of rejection, which is very hard.
A little bit.
Yes. There are days when the stress is high. We could also have a series of events, boom, 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 back to back to back. We lose a deal. We find out someone that we really love on our team has resigned. We have an internal meeting put on our calendar that completely disrupts my workflow and week. And the last thing I want is another meeting from corporate, whatever. I find out that a huge closing meeting I had scheduled today, that they're canceling it and they need to reschedule. You know, whatever it is in sales, you have it back to back. It's not good. You just did a set of 50 calls, not one person answered the phone. You're behind on your activity and scheduling for the week. Things like that can knock you down. They can create a story. You can create a story within you that puts you in a negative emotional state. It puts you in an emotional state that actually causes you to start spiraling the wrong way. And in the way you think triggers how you feel. And that emotional state then puts you in a position to set you up for the actions that you take. So if you're energized and optimistic and passionate and excited and teed up for your day, the actions that come from that are good. And you're going to be excited to execute. You'll have more energy and you'll be excited to continue to race to good outcomes. But if you're feeling down and negative and woe is me, good things don't come from that. And so your actions will be hindered. And the last part of the BQ wheel would be how you perform. So how you think yields how, or triggers how you feel, which then dictates the actions, and it yields your performance. Well, then your performance, good or bad, feeds into how you think. So it's either a virtuous or a vicious cycle. And what I noticed is that I had a high resilience factor and I didn't allow things to get me down. And if I lost a deal, or a meeting got canceled, or my schedule got thrown off for whatever reason, the technology went down, customers are blowing up my phone, I had a decision to make on how it was going to affect my emotional state so that I could stay on course to do all the actions I needed to do in order to hit my metrics. Granted, my goals were very, very, very high. If I was going to achieve 2 or 3x of other salespeople, then that had to correspond to the amount of actions that I did on a daily basis. Leading indicators yield lagging results. Activity yields performance. Thinking about your thoughts, words, and actions being seeds, I'm big into seed planting. The seeds you plant into the ground will be the harvest that you reap. And if your day's not starting until 9 and you're rolling in and then having a cup of coffee, and by rolling in right now, I mean to your home office, but you're rolling in, you're still in your PJs, you've got your nice work shirt on top. And
finishing up the Today Show.
Right. And you're just, well, we'll see what happens today. You know, holidays are coming around. Oh, pandemic's getting worse. Oh, my boss said something mean yesterday. Whatever. Like, yep. If you're rolling in that way, you're not going to get results.
No. And you know, I've worked with a lot of sellers. To me, is it compartmentalizing? Because we all have things going on in our life, right? We're all living through 2020. We all have problems that go on at home. We all had the boss that gave us a hard time. But then you said you've got to be on. So you've got to be on and you've got to be aggressive with what you're doing. Do you have to be able to compartmentalize all the negative stuff and just focus on that positive? You know, where does that, how do you get that BQ work? I like you said, it's a virtuous or a vicious cycle. Yes. So how do they make it that virtuous cycle?
Well, you have to take care of yourself first. And you have to fuel yourself with goodness if you want goodness to come out of you.
So Mary, this has been some great stuff. Like my favorite salespeople I talk to, we could do this for several hours. But before you leave today, I want our listeners to know how they can reach out to you. You have an exciting new radio show that's going to be starting for businesses. And tell us how to get in touch with you and some of the cool things you have going on with your company.
Yeah, Sales BQ, our company, we just wrapped up 3 years in business. We have our Quota Crusher podcast, which now is getting pretty decent recognition and making some lists. We're so excited about that. So you can listen to the podcast. We recently split into two brands. We've moved all of our sales trading, sales coaching underneath the Sales BQ brand. We have a free sales trading room at salesbq.com, as well as a Sales BQ quiz. So you can find out where you rank on that and what to do to improve your BQ. And then all of our consulting work and revenue generating work and what we do for CEOs that are second stage growth, looking to scale. Typically, they've reached a revenue plateau. They can't get past it. We have a program under our new brand, House of Revenue, where we align with them for a period of 6 to 12 months. They get a VP of marketing, VP of sales and customer success, revenue operations, our marketing bench, and we completely rebuild and revitalize their revenue ecosystem on an unshakable foundation and get them to 2x MRR within 10 to 12 months. That's found at houseofrevenue.com. And lastly, we are launching a radio show, launches January 2021, called House of Revenue on 710 KNUS, local Denver station, that will air on their website. So you can listen to it from anywhere. And that'll be Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. Mountain Time. And we will be interviewing CEOs that are second stage growth between 2 and 20 million, helping solve their revenue challenges on air.
Fantastic. You got a lot of good stuff going on. What I really enjoyed our conversation today, not only a lot of good information for sales reps, sales leaders, but the founders and CEOs listening, I think you opened up a few eyes as to some of the process and things they could be looking at, which is great. Before you go, I have one last sales test for you. You ready?
I can't wait.
This is not going to be an easy one. I have a feeling you'll do it, but I heard you on the Sell or Die podcast with the Gittimers. And you told them that this was a lifelong dream. You were so excited to be on that show. I want to hear how excited you were to be on our show today. So, you better be good here.
When I first saw the name of the podcast, I knew there was no way I couldn't be here. I'm a millennial CEO, and almost all of our, not almost, okay, 70% of our CEO clients are boomers. And the okay boomer, I knew I had to be a part of it because I think our team spends more time teaching boomers about how people sell today and how marketing is built and aligned with sales and the winning strategies that can take their companies to the next level. And when I saw it, I said, I have to be a part of this. I feel like I have these conversations all day long with our clients and I'm ready to blast it to your audience. So, okay, boomer, it's time to grow your revenue.
Very good. I love it. And we hope to be a multi-generational show. And this is fantastic. Mary, thank you very much for all your time today. We'll include links for your stuff there in the show notes. And we hope to have you back and talk again in the future.
Thank you.
So that's it. That's today's show. Okay, Boomer, teach me sales.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Be sure to subscribe and follow. We hope you make us a part of your week, and don't forget to share with your friends and coworkers.
Should we mention the website?
Sure, the website, okboomerteachmesales.com.
And where can they engage with us?
LinkedIn at Thomas J. Bloomer.
We hope to see you there.